equipped with item 2, it's Snescapades, a chronological journey through the North American Super Nintendo library with a few pit stops along the way. We play them briefly, we judge them harshly, we rank them. That is pretty much all you need to know. I am Chase Keys. This is future Chase Keys, in fact, because this is part 2 of our Playing with Power episode for January 1994, where we discuss that month's issue of Nintendo Power. It was a bonus issue. It was very, very big. We had a lot to talk about here. We talked for so long, this almost ended up being a three-part episode, but due to the audio issues that we've been having here, I decided not to subject y'all to that, so I made some cuts, made some really, really tough cuts. I hope you appreciate it. Sorry again for those audio issues. Hopefully they won't be too bad when you're listening to this episode. If you haven't listened to part one yet, you might want to go back and do that. And if you're not following along on the Internet Archive with this issue of Nintendo Power, why not? Go check it out. It's a really, really good one. And okay, with all that out of the way, I'm going to kick things back over to ME0 and past me. And yeah, enjoy the rest of the show. So next up, we've got this interesting index of
all the games
for the Super Nintendo that are out or upcoming.
Yeah. And hey, we've played almost all of these.
Yeah, just about. Some things in here that I'm just like, wait, is that even a thing? Did that ever come out? I don't know. Like Sylvester and Tweety. I don't know if there's a Sylvester and Tweety game that actually ended up coming out.
I don't know. Yeah.
We could dig through this, or, you know, there's a lot of stuff here we could just move on to.
Yeah. I mean, all I will say is that, it makes me very proud of our progress with the show that, so many of these games are ones that I recognize and can at least put an image to. Yeah, it's kind of nice to see it all laid out like that.
What was Arcus Odyssey? Is that even a thing that actually came out? It's saying November 93.
That's a name that I'm familiar with, so I think that is a game that exists. I'm not sure. There's actually a few games here that it says are already out that I don't believe is the case.
Well, I mean, they might know better than wherever we got that list from, too. So
one of these things is maybe a little wrong. Maybe it's our list that we've been using. Maybe it's this one.
Yeah. Wait, do they talk about Solstice in here? Can we finally, like, maybe get a little bit of information on what the hell was going on with Solstice?
I'm not seeing it here. So they clearly don't have any better idea of what's going on with it than we do.
Yeah, I guess not. It also doesn't seem to be under other. Oh, that's for sports games. Other sports games. Okay. I'm not too big on sports, but I am big on Magic Eye. Folks, remember Magic Eye?
I love Magic Eye.
This is a little bit weird. I think that maybe at least one of these pages is out of order, but because we've got more of these later on in the magazine, but we get a little Magic Eye thing here. I don't know how well this actually works on a computer screen.
I can see it. I can absolutely see all of these.
Oh, can you?
Oh, yeah. So this is a weird thing about me. I'm really good at Magic Eye. I don't have to get close to it. I can just be sitting here and sort of, like, do a thing with my eye muscles or something and see them.
Wow.
So I can confirm that all of these work. This first one here is a fun picture of Mario with weird, like, dot eyes that are just, like, kind of floating in his eye sockets. Huh.
Okay, then. Well, yeah, I thought I was pretty good at these, but I don't have the skills that you've got with this.
I don't know why I can do that. I think that I had a bunch of these books as a kid, and I kind of just trained myself how to do it. These are such cool things, though. I miss these an awful lot.
Yeah, I've got, like, a couple of books that I got from my local retro store that I've got now that I like to just look through them and do that again. Yeah, these were so cool back in the day. I don't know why we ever stopped making them.
I don't either. I don't know. But yeah, surely if you're listening to this show, you know what a Magic Eye is. But you know, they're those images that don't look like anything, but if you kind of cross your eyes or do something where your vision kind of overlaps itself in a weird way, the images come together to form a three-dimensional image that you can see. And they were really cool, really popular thing for a little while in the 90s. And yeah, this is like really kind of the moment for it here when it's like this, like, middle period of the 90s when this magazine came out is exactly when these were super, super popular.
Yeah, so I'll see if I can, like, copy and paste these onto the website so that folks can take a look at them. I'll also have to get to a better configuration to try them out myself, because they're up on a big monitor right now that I can't really do a weird thing with. But so we'll get back to that later, because right now we've got the top titles of 1993.
Yeah, we got a Game of the Year list here, folks, from Nintendo Power for 1993. This is a thing that I think is only going to really read for you and me. But they mention here near the end of this that when the dust settled, we came out of the Star Fox conference room with the definitive list of 1993's best games. Star Fox is one of the conference rooms in the building you and I used to work in.
Okay. Yeah, which would make sense because that is the older building.
Yeah, all of the conference rooms in Nintendo's offices are named after various games. And they used that one for the deliberation for these games this year. So
do a little more inside baseball here. Something we're going to talk about in a still a ways away is Donkey Kong Country, which had a promotional video that came with it. If you were a Nintendo Power subscriber, they talk a lot about the treehouse.
That's right.
I think the treehouse is where, like, all their beta testers are now. Yeah, because I don't think any of the other two buildings, like, there's basically, like, three buildings that make up the Nintendo campus now. And I think the one that we were in as, you know, customer service people was the original building, and the other two were built since then.
Anyway, just kind of a fun little thing. They also gave Star Fox the number one game of the year here, which, makes sense to me. Kind of ticks all the boxes for this kind of thing, right? Big, flashy game, fun, new technology. Nothing else looks like it. I totally get why they would put that on top here. Actually, most of the games in the top 10 for the Super Nintendo makes sense to me. I don't really know that I would have put Batman Returns or Super Empire Strikes Back in here, but the rest of them are all really solid, you know, choices. Street Fighter 2 Turbo, Mario All-Stars, The Lost Vikings, you know.
They put, like, Zombies Ate My Neighbors as an honorable mention. I probably would have put that above something like Batman Returns, definitely.
I would put Zombies Ate My Neighbors and Rock and Roll Racing in the top 10 here above the games I mentioned, above Batman Returns or Super Empire Strikes Back.
I'm with you there. We've also got top five for Game Boy and NES, with Link's Awakening taking the top spot for Game Boy, and Mega Man 6,
yes,
taking the top spot for the NES. Sorry, sometimes I have to remember what order the Roman numerals come in. Which one means less and which one means, or which one means subtract one and which one means add one. Yes.
Right.
Game of the Year stuff. Anything else you want to talk about there?
Not really. I mean, it's a pretty straightforward list. It does make me think back on, because we were in 1993 for so long that I kind of do lose sight of the number of good games that came out in that year, just because there were so many games that came out in the year overall. But yeah, there really was some really good stuff in 93 for the Super Nintendo, and this list reminds me of that. So
next up, we've got a pretty lengthy article about sounds yeah, that come out yeah. of the Super NES specifically.
This cool article, I don't ultimately think I wish that it was a little more technical instead of just like the kind of, you know, yeah, look at these musicians that did some amount of music that was adjacent to a Super Nintendo game. But the first bit of this, I think, is really interesting because it does talk about the way that, like, sound drivers work for the Super Nintendo, you know, the different processors in the Super Nintendo that do things like process different parts of the game data. Once again, very glad to see this kind of stuff in the magazine. This was the kind of thing when I was starting to read game magazines in the 90s that made me so fascinated with the nitty gritty of how like games are made. If you're a kid playing video games, how would you even know what even remotely goes into making like music work on a system without something like this, you know?
I also like, you know, this is a little thing here about companies that created their own sound drivers, and they mention software creations and some of their projects like Plock, Super Off-Road, Spider-Man, and the X-Men. Fortunately, they don't mention the Follin brothers, who I know are responsible for at least two of those soundtracks. But
right, yeah,
you know, they were the composers and not the creators of the driver. But still, you know, hey, you know, the composers play an important part in making that sound happen too.
And we do get shout outs here to the 2 Unlimited soundtrack for Biometal and an actual picture of the group that sang the Clay Fighter theme.
What? Oh my gosh, we do. We finally know. We finally know who they are. Well, I don't know if they actually say their names, but
They say the name of the group. It's some it's a
group. Okay.
Yeah, Interplay called on vocal group Euphony to sing the theme song to Clay Fighter for the game's title screen. Euphony? Yeah.
I wonder if they were just like a session group for like recording studios, so yeah. Somebody needed like backups or something, or if they, well, something else.
Yeah, it's a good question.
Okay, so I tried looking them up, but there's like 6 different bands that have that name now, and I don't think any of them are the same ones or could possibly be the same ones from this group that sang the Clay Fighter theme. So sadly, that will have to remain a mystery. As for Arcus Odyssey, which we mentioned earlier, that one I do know something about. I think it's come up before. That was a game that was developed by Wolf Team and was going to be published over here in North America on the Super Nintendo. It was already published on the Genesis by that point. But Sega ended up buying the publisher that was distributing Wolf Team's games in America. So it ended up just getting canceled because, you know, why are you going to release a game on your competitor's system? You're not going to do that. That'd be nuts. We also have a techno group called Psychosonic, the Excalibur 2097 soundtrack. Psychosonic, loved Closing Time.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Yeah, and we have a little thing here on the top 20 soundtracks as decided by somebody? I'm not really sure. With Legend of Zelda, Link to the Past, number 1. Honestly, mostly these are really good soundtracks. I am a little suspicious of, like, once again, the presence of Super Star Wars and Super Empire Strikes Back on this list.
I mean, like, are they saying that because it's music from Star Wars and they want to highlight that here? I could imagine, you know, like, we're just going to have like a quick list here of notable soundtracks that we want to shout out for whatever reason. I don't know that a ranked list like this is a good way of doing it.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, right?
The chorus from Clay Fighter, it's a cool idea. It's the only game on the SNES soundtrack that, or, you know, the only game in the SNES library that has actual vocals in its songs and, you know, in its title theme. But like, come on, you're going to tell me that it's the 4th best soundtrack even by, you know, the end of 93 on the Super Nintendo? Get out of here with that. Come on.
You're gonna tell me that it is a better soundtrack than the Yuzo Koshiro soundtrack for ActRaiser?
Yeah, come on.
Which is number 5 here. That's not true. It's just like, I'm sorry.
I'm not seeing Castlevania on here.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Castlevania is not on here. You know, the neither one of the Top Gear games, which both have really good soundtracks, neither of those are on here. You know, so yeah, I don't know. This being a list is kind of sus to me, but these are games, you know, even something like, I get why, even though I wouldn't put it on here, Bubsy at least does have those voice samples in it, so that's something. Shouldn't probably be a ranked list, though.
Rock and Roll Racing, it's cool if they put, like, the little MIDI versions of those, you know, very popular songs there. But, like, that's only three songs. And
really going to say it's the second best soundtrack on the Super Nintendo, yeah.
Kind of a disappointing list, but a very interesting look at, you know, some of the music and such in various games. So that's cool. Then we get more Magikai. More Magikai.
Three more Magikais. And it's interesting. One of these things here I have a little bit of a question about, because we do get hints at what these are. And the hint for image three is it goes great on pizza, which is interesting because the thing it's an image of kind of looks like something that goes great on pizza, but it is not. It's a Goomba. Like, you can definitely see it's a Goomba. It's got like a big frowny face and eyes and feet and stuff, but it does mostly look like a mushroom. So are we saying they're edible now?
I'm still mad about the whole, like, we've basically retconned the idea that Goombas are actually chestnut men. They are just mushrooms because everybody thought they looked like mushrooms, so they're just mushrooms now. That disappoints me because I like the idea of them being chestnut men better than mushrooms. But
yeah, me too.
What are you going to do?
Same.
And hey, if you can tell us what that last image is, we might be able to score some free power stamps.
We may share the stamps with you. Probably not, honestly, but... you know, you're listening to this show, so you have a parasocial relationship with us, and I think you just want us to be happy, basically. So, yeah.
Right. Yes. I can't do these right now. I don't have an optimal setup for these, but, I can only guess what number two is. The hint is, it's not Mario, but he can jump higher than Mario. So, no way of knowing what that could be.
It's probably like Kariba's shoe.
Oh yeah. That makes sense. Maybe it's Michael Jordan.
Michael Jordan can jump higher than Mario. This is a fact. These are very fun. And like you, I don't really know that I understand the layout of this whole section, because it seems like, I mean, yeah, they put the first Magikai at the very start of the members special that is the thing that has all the features we've just been talking about since we brought up the first Magikai. And then we got like a little table of contents and then everything else. And then they kind of loop back around to it with these last these three more Magikai things. So. I don't know. I guess maybe that first one was just like a tease, or
I'm going to say it's probably just when the magazine got cut up to be scanned, they just, you know, accidentally put one in the wrong place.
Probably right. Probably right. But if we move on from that, we've got preview of 1994's games. And boy, we start off with an exciting one here. Super Metroid is the first one that they have a two-page spread about here. They've got some really cool like concept art here of a Metroid and of Kraid and a Chozo, which, yeah. So I don't know. I'm very excited to get to Super Metroid. Possibly more. I think Super Metroid's a game where like my affection for it has grown the more of this show we've done. What is surely going to be like kind of a longer hype campaign is kind of starting here. I think they've mentioned Super Metroid a couple of times before, but this is the first time they're really showing off much of it in detail here.
Yeah, like you said, really great concept art though, and some cool screenshots, you know, kind of teasing everybody. We also get some previews for NBA Jam and Ken Griffey Jr.'s Major League Baseball, which are sports, so we can probably just...
We can probably just skip those. Though I am looking forward to playing NBA Jam when it comes out, but yeah.
And then we also get Wario Land for Game Boy.
Yeah, I get Wario Land for Game Boy. Some more fun art here, and, you know, this is exciting. I like the Wario Land games. I'm not super familiar with them, but it's cool to see this series sort of starting up here, because I think it is a fun and interesting branch of the greater like kind of Mario umbrella of games. And another thing here that I think is kind of interesting, which is not sort of the thing that you tended to see Nintendo Power do up to this point. They mention which development team at Nintendo is actually working on this one.
Oh, weird. They're actually telling people who's making the game and giving them credit for it. Wow.
they're actually saying R&D1, and they're specifically pointing out that those are the same people working on Super Metroid, and which developed the previous two Super Mario Land games for the Game Boy. So, I don't know. This is the thing that the overwhelming impression I get from this issue of the magazine, which I think is really interesting, is this feels more recognizable as a video game magazine, as I understand them, than a lot of Nintendo Power has been up to this point. Like, this feels more concrete and more like about games as like a thing that exists in the world and that, you know, come from somewhere than I would have really expected. And I love that. I'm really excited to see that.
Yeah. Yeah. I this is a really cool issue. And
yeah,
I don't think we're going to, you know, always be getting this kind of inside baseball from Nintendo in these magazines.
No, not necessarily. But it's fun to see it when it shows
absolutely.
Up.
Something that's a little bit less fun is Battletoads and Double Dragon, a game that we did not care for.
Yeah.
And,
no.
I think all the art for this came out of the game itself, and it's kind of ugly.
It's absolutely hideous. There's a lot of work that seems to have gone into making basically turning a pretty normal sort of Nintendo Power feature where, you know, they kind of go through the game level by level into something with a little bit more of like a comic book thing going on where like the characters are talking to you and like talking to each other as they are narrating the stuff. There's effort that's gone in here, but it's just hideous, and it's for a game that I don't like. So
it's a very inspired way of presenting this sort of thing. I will give them that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think this harkens back to like some other Battletoads features that they did for the NES game back mm-hmm. in the day, because I think there was like a lot of comics and stuff about Battletoads. Mm-hmm. It looked like it could have been the next Ninja Turtles. It looked like it could have been something that would have, you know, really caught on and been a transmedia juggernaut like Ninja Turtles was, but it wasn't.
It didn't. Yeah. It didn't, and it wasn't, so.
But yeah, so we get a lot of images that, again, I think are from, like, the attract mode of the game itself. Maybe even from the arcade game in some of the cases. I'm not sure. For stuff that was on the SNES, it looks kind of impressive, but if here, the way it's presented, a lot of that art just looks kind of ugly. But again, points for the innovative way it was laid out, like a comic book, and still informative on what the game was. But yeah, not a game either of us liked. Next up, we've got Batman the Animated Series for Game Boy. We're going to eventually get a Batman Animated Series game on the Super Nintendo as well, but this is the Game Boy one. We've got, you know, pictures of characters from the show that look like, you know, they're just...
This just all looks like the Bruce Timm art from the show. But they've got nice layouts here, and it's actually a fairly extensive feature. It's like 6 pages. And, you know, I don't particularly know that I've ever heard anything about this game one way or another, but it seems all right.
Yeah, I'm sure it's fine. Scarecrow looks weirder than I remember him looking in the show. Anything else to say about Batman?
It's just interesting to go back to a time when Harley Quinn was an existent character but did not rank highly enough in terms of the Batman universe to put, you know, pictures of her in a magazine article about something based on the show.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, let's move on to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3 Radical Rescue, also for the Game Boy. A game that does actually seem a little interesting.
First of all, we got a real gnarly, gnarly dude looking Leonardo.
Oh, yeah. He is warped. He is so covered in disgusting musculature, and he just looks, it's a hideous image. Like, he looks like a...
He's ropey.
He's, yeah. This feature stood out to me. Thing on this game stood out to me, both because this game does seem kind of like an interesting little like like proto Metroidvania sort of thing, but also just because of all the art in here. Like, that picture, which I assume is the game's box art, is frightening. And then we have images of the turtles here throughout the article that are like the most off-model images of them I've ever seen.
These look like they're probably Nintendo Power originals to me. I mean, like, they're recognizable as the Ninja Turtles. They're
kind of. I mean, mostly.
It's definitely a different way of presenting them. I kind of don't hate it. Like, it harkens back to, like, earlier Nintendo Power for me, where they could just kind of, like, do their own takes on some of these characters. And, you know, it was like the Wild West, you know. And so in a way, I kind of dig this.
Yeah, I like that, too. I mean, even though these are ugly, I do like that they're their own thing. And actually, most of them are basically all right. The one I really have a problem with is this image of Leonardo that's on page 81, where he appears to have just, like, a giant bulbous, like, schnoz. Like, it looks like he has, like, he looks like a Mr. Saturn, almost, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, kind it's of. So weird. Actually, there's a pretty...
Like, what if Mario was a Ninja Turtle?
What if Mario was a Ninja Turtle? And then we have what seems like maybe just, like, maybe a redraw of the same head on Donatello a couple pages later.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it's a really angry-looking Donatello for some reason. So it's interesting. These almost look like doodles that would be on like a teenager's notebook or something, you know?
Yeah. But again, like, I kind of like it because it looks like that.
Yeah, no, totally. Totally. Yeah. Because this game is kind of a bit of a, I guess a bit of a search action game, Metroidvania type of thing. We don't have as many kind of linear level layout pictures here. We have more just like advice on what to do in certain rooms. And I don't know that I would really want to go back and play this game, but I would be interested in like a fan remake of this, you know? Like if somebody wanted to do like a touched up version, I would be interested in seeing what the basic design of this game looks like with a little bit of, you know, modern polish on it.
I don't know. I'd be curious to try this out. Like, this looks like a really interesting take on a game like this. And I also like that it seems like from the description here, they do an infinitely better job of giving the turtles unique abilities than, like, say, that old NES game did.
Like, I like the idea of, like, Michelangelo having, like, kind of a helicopter thing he can do with his nunchucks. Raphael has the ability to, like, tuck into his shell so that he can get through small spaces.
He's got the morph ball. Raphael's got the morph ball.
He's the one. He got the morph ball. None of the rest of them got it. He kept it to himself. But yeah, like, I don't know. I do agree with you. I think this is an interesting looking game, and I actually would be curious about it too. It does seem ambitious at the very least, and I always appreciate that.
Well, when we get to our Game Boy version of the show, which we'll never get to finish.
So many Sokoban games.
There's still so much of this magazine to go. We got Tetris 2. This was the weird Tetris that it played a little bit like a cross between Tetris and Puyo Puyo, because, like, you had to explode pieces with special pieces that had bombs in them or something like that. I don't think this one caught on.
No, does not seem to have. I've never heard anybody really talk about the secret greatness of Tetris 2.
Nope. Yeah, me neither. We also get some Chippendale Rescue Rangers 2. I did not realize that a second Chippendale came out for the NES. I probably knew that at one point and just forgot about it.
I do actually kind of remember this existing. Like, I don't ever remember knowing about DuckTales 2 back in the day, but I do remember this one. And I don't know that I thought it was as good as the first one for some reason. I really don't remember much about it, but yeah, you know, it looks all right from these screenshots and from the way it's talked about here. Like, it seems to be actually kind of similar to the first Chippendales game in a lot of ways. These were late days for the NES, you know?
It's a little weird they didn't try doing something like this on the SNES at this point. Like, you know, we didn't get a DuckTales or Rescue Rangers on SNES. We got Goof Troop, I guess, but...
We got Goof Troop. We got, unfortunately, we got... Well, okay, actually, it was Tailspin.
It must have been. That was an early Disney afternoon.
It must have been, yeah.
But yeah, we got your Chip, we got your Dale, we got your Monterey Jack, we got your Gadget, early entry into getting your kids into furries kind of thing there.
Yep, yeah, yeah. I
think is what she's best known for.
Got Zipper, the character I always forget existed in Rescue Rangers. I don't know. This game looks all right, and I feel like they put a decent bit of effort into this feature. We got some nice backgrounds here. We do mostly just have different sort of mix and matches of the art from Disney, but I'm now kind of suspecting that Disney maybe had some like sort of stricter, more paranoid standards for other people drawing their characters, and that may be why this is the way it works for any Disney game. But
That wouldn't surprise me at all. You know, again, like, I mean, maybe they were just like traces and somebody redrew them, but they look pretty on model.
They look pretty on model. Yeah,
the coloring's a little bit wonky on some of them, but
that also could be the scans though.
Oh, could be. Yeah, it's true.
Though actually, I will say the scans that we're using for this one are pretty high quality.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like this one looks like they had a good source image to work from, so that's good.
I mean, you were actually able to do the Magic Eye things, which I'll be honest, I was not expecting those to actually be able to work.
Yep, yeah.
So it is good to have confirmation on that. Let's see. We got Counselor's Corner. I don't know if we really need to go through this again. This is in every issue where people ask the game counselors questions, and if they get that question enough, they will answer them.
Then after that, we have the Power Players Challenge. This is, of course, where they invite you to submit your high scores for various games or challenges that are specific to games, like can you defeat Reptile on the hard level in Mortal Kombat? And what is the lowest score you can finish Star Fox with? That is interesting. And this, like everything, the previous section, this is in every issue of the magazine. So I don't really have much of anything else to say about this. This is followed, though, by the Players Poll Contest, showing what the Players Poll Contest is this month.
Yeah, you get to meet Ivan Stewart of driving truck fame, I guess.
Yeah, reigning Baja 1000 champ, Ivan Stewart. This is not exciting to me, but, you know, I assume it was to some people. And, of course, this is a Players Poll contest. So in order to enter this, you would take the little card that comes with Nintendo Power where you kind of list your top game picks and send it in to Nintendo, and that enters you in the contest. And you have a very, very low chance of either winning the trip to meet Ivan Stewart or a driver's helmet and a copy of Super Off-Road The Baja.
Yeah, which I'm pretty sure we played and we thought was
We thought it was okay. I mean, it was a little better than we kind of expected because it had a little more going on technically, but not an amazing game.
I'm not sure I like it as much as original Super Off-Road, which just kind of had like those little diorama looking racetracks. I kind of liked that.
Right. That was like a kind of like a single screen racing game. I like that more too. Yeah.
It was cute. Now we get the top 20 for January 1994. Mortal Kombat, number one for the SNES. Surprising with Street Fighter 2 Turbo right underneath it. Mm-hmm. Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening, number one for Game Boy. Super Mario 3 for NES. Nothing too groundbreaking there. Super Mario Brothers 3 has been on the list for 51 months. Legend of Zelda has been on there for 64 months. My goodness.
Those feel like games that are not going to move from those spots until the magazine stops doing the top 10 list for those systems.
That is probably the case. And then we get to now playing. So something kind of struck me a little bit about this. So we got a little blurb here from Mega Man X, and it, you know, they're still listing their good and bad qualities. For this one, they say great control and fun, challenging play. Their negative is the theme remains the same as the Game Boy and NES Mega Man titles. Now,
yes.
Does theme seem like the right word to use there?
It does not. That's not what I know. I agree. It doesn't. I would probably be like the gameplay or the, because what they're trying to say, right, is that it's still a Mega Man game. Maybe if you've played like a dozen of those already.
Yeah, like the format.
Format, I think, is what they're trying to to say there.
And that makes me think, like, is this the kind of thing that they're thinking of whenever they use the terms theme and fun, which is something that comes up a lot in this magazine? Like, I think theme and fun tends to be, like, one of their categories for their awards every year.
That's a good question, actually, because I've never really been able to make sense of that. And this maybe is the Rosetta Stone for it here.
What the heck they're talking about when they say theme. Yeah. But there you go. We got Claymates. We got something called Sengoku, which is a game I'm not entirely sure actually came out over here.
Yeah, this was one that was a question for me as well, because I mean, we certainly haven't played this. Maybe it's coming up, but yeah, I am not familiar with this game.
Sengoku was an SNK brawler. It did come out on the Super Famicom, but the Super Nintendo version never made it stateside. At least not until it came out on the Wii Virtual Console in 2012. We've also got The Lawnmower Man, which we played a while ago. The VR stages don't last. Oh, the VR stages are visually impressive and fun to play. I disagree about that last part.
Yeah, quite considerably. Yeah, we've got that. We've got T2, the arcade game. That's a Super Scope game. I think that our impression of that from the expert that we consulted is that that is maybe the worst Super Scope game.
Yeah, that sounds right to me.
Yeah.
That is what I remember. I do like their negative for Super Solitaire, which I think like is completely spot on. A deck of cards is considerably cheaper.
Brutal. Absolutely bodied. It's solitaire.
Yeah.
Like, it's you truly do not need a virtual solitaire game that costs money.
Or do you? We'll find out. We'll put it through its paces, and maybe we'll be like, oh my god, you guys, I played Super Solitaire and my life's changed. I'm a better, more realized human.
That's right, yeah. You got Flashback, which they do warn the play control takes some getting used to, but overall seem pretty positive about. And then got Beethoven Second, which
they call Beethoven Second and not Beethoven the Ultimate Canine Caper.
Yeah, so right. I don't know what to think here.
I'm going to say maybe a high-tech expressions wasn't in a good place around this time, and we're not all that concerned with consistent naming of their software anymore.
The positive and the negative for this are actually pretty brutal.
Yeah.
Because the negative, as you'd expect, is very poor animation and play control, lack of depth and low challenge. But actually, the positive is more damning, because it is just some of the digitized graphics look okay when they're not in motion. That's the best thing they could say about Beethoven Second, the video game.
The blurb on this is just, Beethoven is a dog and his four puppies are missing. Go fetch. In this canine adventure from high tech, you'll bark and romp through four levels of side-scrolling action. If you've always wanted a video dog, here's your chance.
It's just absolutely game type dog action.
That classic game genre dog action.
Dog action, yeah, that's right.
Years just later, like, on the PlayStation 2, somebody would be developing what would turn into A Dog's Life and say, hey, how come we haven't had a dog action game since Beethoven Second?
Right, we really need to bring that back. And yeah, and we do also have the review of Soldiers of Fortune here, which does mention, you have no real control in the negative. You have no real control over your computer partner in the one-player game.
That is true.
So yes, they are being more honest there about the limits of how that game works in this bit. So
let's see. We got some Metal Marines. We talked about that one not too long ago. And
we did, yeah.
You know, I think I ended up liking that a lot more than I thought I was going to. But what did Nintendo Power think of it? Great concept and good challenge. Passwords preserve your place in the game. Negative, the play control can be awkward. Oh, there's that word awkward again. Especially when it comes to controlling your Metal Marines. Not as much strategy is required as in most simulations, which I would say that's a column in the plus for me, but
there's a number of games here. We won't go through all of them, I don't think, because they're mostly not interesting enough to do that with, though they do really soft roll the badness of the Adventures of Dr. Franken, You know, it's like, I think they could have been at least as brutal to that one as they were to Beethoven Second. All they say about it is the gameplay and challenge are average.
Yeah.
So
they all say a weird but funny theme, which seems to be a more correct way to use that word. So
that is a better way to use theme. So I don't know what to think about.
Yeah, neither do I. Also, Bebe's Kids is coming up. That game is notoriously terrible. I know.
Yeah, it is. But yeah, do you have any other things you wanted to point out from this before we move on?
We're talking about an Asterix game that I am not actually sure came out over here.
It's always hard for me to like, there seems like there's so many Asterix games, but I'm never clear on like where any of them actually were available, you know? So I want to point out here, we do also have, after all of the little blurbs about the games, we do actually have the scores that they gave them. And it's interesting to note that they tend to sound a little neutral when they're talking about games, unless it's like really clearly bad. But the Mega Man X scores here are nearly perfect.
Yeah.
It's like 4.0, 4.0, 3.8, 3.8 out of 4. So it's like, okay, they're not making a big deal about this, but like, this is a game that like, if you actually look at the scores, they're saying, this is a real good one here, folks.
Yeah. Well, cause you know, again, this is the limitations of this coming out of Nintendo itself, is that, you know, like, oh, we can't say this is the one game to get this month.
But yeah, if you're paying attention, you can see it.
We get Star Trek The Next Generation, which, you know, I love the Super Nintendo. I love Star Trek. I don't necessarily think these are two things that are going to go well together, but we'll,
not really. I'm not we'll super see. Optimistic about this. And of course, Pack Watch is the section that is a bunch of kind of little blurbs that are, you know, kind of little paragraph long previews of different upcoming games. So, yeah, Star Trek Next Generation, Super R-Type 3, and Super Adventure Island 2 are all coming up here.
Yeah, which hopefully brings the dinosaurs back. We can only hope.
Yeah, be less of a disappointing game than Super Adventure Island 1 was so long ago when we played it.
Yeah. Now, here's something interesting. We've got Reign of Superman, which I'm wondering, is this what would end up becoming like the game that came out in the wake of like the Death of Superman arc that was
right? Yeah, because I know there is a Death of Superman game on the Super Nintendo, right?
Right. Yes.
It seems like this must because the kind of event that spun out of the Death of Superman comics was called Reign of the Supermen, I think. So, you know, that seems like this must be the same game. But I guess that at some point they changed the title, or this was never the real title and they were just sort of keeping it close to the vest until the comic event was, you know, out there. But yeah,
I am not sure. We've also got Bubsy 2. We've got Fievel Goes West. I don't remember that having a game associated with it, but it doesn't necessarily mean it didn't.
I don't either.
We also get Fun and Games, which I think was one of those, like a series. There were a series of Fun and Games.
Seems like more like a toy on a, that, almost.
Used the mouse and were mostly designed for really little kids. That'll be an interesting one to look at because, you know, again, you know, other than like that Thomas the Tank Engine game, which wasn't very good.
There's been very little for that age group on the Super Nintendo so far. Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see, like, you know, how well this holds up. And if, you know, we thought that, you know, if we could like play this now and think like, hey, might this have been a good game back in the day for little kids, or is this maybe missing the mark? I don't know. Peacekeepers, which they say could be also be called Rival Turf 3, because yeah, that's one of the that's the last game I think in the Rushing Beat series,
right, which all ended up with different unconnected localizations.
Yes. We also get Zoda's Revenge, Star Tropics 2, which is a sequel to a game I really like.
Do you like Zoda's Revenge? Is that a game you like? Because I don't know much about Zoda's Revenge in comparison to original Star Tropics.
No, I don't care for it. It takes you out of the island setting, which is like one of the things I really liked about Star Tropics.
Pretty different sort of game, right?
I never really dug into it too far, but I don't know, maybe one of these days I'll give it another shake, see? But we won't be talking about it on this show because it is an NES game, because there are still actual NES games coming out in this, the year of our Luigi, 1994.
Incredible, incredible. Though I feel like Star Tropics 2 was one of the last big ones, right? Like, maybe the last big one in a lot of ways.
Yeah, they were advertising that one with that redesigned NES that came out.
Yeah, that's right.
This time, so yeah, we get more stuff, Pack Watch update. We get something called Citadel, which
looks like it looks like a, like, kind of like a Mech Warrior style, like, mech game that uses the Super FX chip and was evidently designed by Argonaut, the same developer that worked with Nintendo to create the Super FX chip and made Star Fox.
Yeah.
Did this game come out? I feel like we would know about this if it was a thing that existed, right?
Yeah, I don't think this one came out, but I'll double check, and maybe future Chase will pop in here and let us know about it. This game actually did come out. They just changed the name to Vortex, and we will be talking about it when we get to September of 1994. Let's see, we got a little bit here about Ranma One-Half. Fans of the Ranma One-Half comics can now play DTMC's Ranma One-Half, martial arts fighter for the Super NES.
Yeah.
Which we talked about not too long ago.
We did. Oh, there's some fun, to me at least, fun kind of catty digs at some games here. Paragraph where they talk about the an upcoming like jet ski racing game. Game Tech revealed to PackWatch that Super NES players haven't seen the last of motorcycle jet ski racing games. Having learned what not to do with Kawasaki Caribbean Challenge, Game Tech will base their new racer on the excellent engine of Nigel Mansell's World Championship game. So just an acknowledgement there that Kawasaki Caribbean Challenge is terrible. And then later on, in talking about THQ, our PackWatch sources at THQ say that the company has a new focus on quality, which is good news for gamers.
Yeah, we didn't care about that stuff before, but now.
Yeah, it's like, how close can we as this magazine come to saying, we know some of these games are bad?
Making a Domino's Pizza sort of pivot right here. Like, look, we know our products were garbage before, but now they're a lot better.
Now they're better. So, yeah, you know, various games talked about here. I think Citadel is probably the most interesting one to me, just because it seems like a fairly major project. And then just like a bunch of licensed stuff gets talked about here, basically. I don't know. Do you have anything else you wanted to say about this stuff?
For the Pack Watch, I think Super Alfred Chicken. I don't know if that came out.
Yeah.
Alfred Chicken came out for the NES. That's kind of a weird one because it's like a weirdly valuable cart these days, probably because it came out so late in the NES's lifespan that not many of them were produced. So it's actually in my box of valuable games.
Oh, interesting. Wow. Okay.
I mean, you know, it's not like, you know, like crazy retirement money or anything like that, but you know, it's like, you know, $100 or something, I think, last I checked.
We're just starting off 94, and man, there's so many games that are going to come out this year. This doesn't even frankly really scratch the surface.
Yeah, there's some stuff I'm definitely excited to get to talk about, and we're looking at the next issue here at the back. I guess we'll find out a little bit more about Bugs Bunny Rabbit Rampage, so that'll be fun. Maybe, or maybe it won't be.
We'll see. We'll find out. It's a blank canvas for me because I really don't know anything about that game. But we have a couple of interesting things here. We have the advertisement for back issues that you can buy of Nintendo Power. I think I probably would have been a kind of kid who ordered back issues, I have a feeling, if this was an option back in the day for me.
Well, my parents did do that for me one Christmas. Like, they got me a bunch of back issues from before I was a subscriber. That's why I've got a in pretty good shape copy of the very first issue. So
That's very cool. That's very cool.
Another thing I've got that's being advertised here are these Mega Man X Pogs. Not actually Pogs, but the milk caps.
They're milk caps. Mega Man X milk caps. But yeah, I was going to ask if you had ever had any contact with these, because I know you're a real Pogs sort of person.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I've got so many Nintendo Pogs from ordering them off of the power supplies thing. So, you know what? That might be another thing I will try to make scans of so that I can put them on the blog, on the website for you guys, so you can take a look at them if you want.
But, yeah, Pogs were a new enough thing here that in this little ad for the Mega Man X milk caps, there is a little sidebar that says how the milk cap game is played. And it's just a description of how you play Pogs.
Yep. I think that the actual playing of these things is the big problem, because here's the thing.
It's not really a fun game.
It's not fun. It's not fun to actually play this. It's silly. You have to, hit the stack with the slammer and hope that they flip over as they fall. But it's kind of random if they do or not. There's not a lot of actual skill involved in this game, and it's just
right.
It's nonsense. The cool thing about Pogs is that you're collecting the Pogs, and I don't know why this doesn't come back. This ought to, back when I used to go to conventions, and when my wife and I used to go to conventions, and sometimes we would even do a booth so that she could sell art, because she makes pretty good art. I think her art is quite good. I used to try and make some of her stuff into Pogs and trading cards that I would just make myself. You ever go around to artist alleys and conventions, and people are always selling these big prints and everything for, between, 15 and 40 bucks. And it's hey, what if more people sold trading cards? I could buy a whole bunch of cards and keep them in a binder, and I could buy more things from more people that way. I don't know. Is that a thing that might catch on?
I think that's a kind of good idea, honestly.
I want it to be a thing that catches on. I want to be able to go to a convention and just buy a bunch of small things from a bunch of people and, keep them in a binder and just be hey, this is the year that I went to this convention, and here's all the art that I got.
That is a pretty neat idea. I like that, honestly.
Just throwing it out there, folks.
Yeah.
Just throwing it out there.
Well, I think that actually, in after hours of this for us,
oh my goodness, yeah,
has brought us to the end of the January 1994 issue of Nintendo Power.
Yeah, I can't remember if they were already doing this, but there's a cool picture of a Super Nintendo frozen in a block of ice, which is
kind of fun. There is, yeah, that is fun. I like that. And that really kind of wraps it up here, wraps it up in a block of ice, as you'd say, as you have to say in this case. So I guess it's now just time to look forward to the future and to our first episode discussing the games of 1994.
Yeah.
And we got kind of a special one in the pipeline, don't we, for that?
Yeah, we actually do. We have a very special episode. It is going to, in fact, be the first edition of our SNESCAPADE specials in this new season, since, kind of the format change. So
yeah,
we will be talking about Mega Man X and a couple of other things. So stay tuned for that. We will have a special guest. Who is that guest? You'll have to listen and find out.
Well, until that very exciting next time, I'm ME0.
I'm Chase Keys.
Play it loud.
For show notes, game rankings, links to social media, research references, and more, check out our website, snescapades.show. Our intro-outro song is How Now Brown Cow by TechnoAxe, who very generously offers a ton of great music for free at technoaxe.com, TEKNOAXE.com. Thanks for listening.